I could eat a bowl of cherries. Oh, Lord. I could eat a bowl a day. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl of cherries. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl a day. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl of cherries. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl a day. Oh, Lord, I could eat a bowl of cherries. Oh, Lord, I could eat a bowl a day. Oh, Lord, I could eat a bowl of cherries.
Good morning and welcome to Your Homegrown Food. I'm your host, Wander Fox. This is a show all about food. And I have a special guest in the Free Radio studio today. Here to talk about permaculture and food is Mama Fox. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
So I guess we'll just jump right in. I know you just finished a permaculture course in Virginia where you live, and I wanted to ask you how you think permaculture can help farmers and gardeners produce food.
Well, permaculture really is about... Permaculture came from the words permanent and agriculture, so it really is about growing food and growing food in a sustainable way that is good for the earth and good for people. So I guess starting small, using basically practices that are pretty common, organic practices. One way that I've been using in this year since I took the course is I wanted to start a vegetable garden in a place there never was one. So I'm using sheet mulching to create garden space where there was just lawn, putting down cardboard and compost. Good way to start a garden where there may not have been one before without having to dig up the earth, without having to expend a lot of labor doing that, using materials that are easily accessible. You don't have to go buy a lot.
That sounds good. So my next question was going to be, what are some specific permaculture practices that people can use in their garden to grow food, or farmers can use? But you answered that sort of already. Sheet mulching sounds like one thing that... a permaculture practice that farmers and gardeners can use. Are there any other gardening or farming practices that permaculture employs?
Well, I guess another thing I got from the course was to think in terms of edibles around your yard. Instead of planting ornamental plants, to think of plants that would produce berries or fruits, and also to think of vegetables that are perennial vegetables, things that come up on their own year after year. Thinking of allowing things to go to seed so that vegetables return year after year.
Cool. So what kind of vegetables are those? I'm thinking of asparagus, but...
Yeah, asparagus. I think there are things that are edible that we've forgotten about. Things that grow in the wild that are like lamb's quarters and many kinds of greens that we don't think about eating.
I see miner's lettuce a lot growing wild. I know that's edible.
What about...
some other green...
sorrel.
Oh, yeah.
Sorrel's good.
People eat sorrel. Dandelions. I don't know.
Around here's nasturtiums. You could put nasturtiums in your salad.
I don't see nasturtiums growing wild so much, but I guess they are a perennial because they come back year after year.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, I know you've been eating healthy food for many years, so I was hoping you could tell us maybe a little bit about what your food values are, or the principles that you live by for eating and food and stuff, life.
Yeah.
Well, I guess many years ago I read Diet for a Small Planet, and that kind of opened my eyes to a little bit about what goes on with food on our planet, and realizing that there was food for everybody. There's plenty of food for everybody, but so much of it was going into feeding cattle and beef to create hamburgers and meat, which only fed a small proportion of the world. So that sort of began me thinking more about eating more vegetables, fruits, and letting go of eating so much meat. And over the years, it's just become increasingly important to eat organically, eat locally, recognizing that it's so important what we put into our bodies. It's so important to our health and well-being, not only physically, but emotionally and spiritually, too, to eat the food that was provided for us by nature.
That sounds good. You mentioned to me that you eat the food that makes you feel good. So do you think this has influenced your food values and the way you think about food?
Well, yes, actually, because over the years I discovered that I had an allergy to wheat and to dairy products, which I probably had for a long time but never realized it. When I stopped eating those, I stopped having the flu all the time. So it became worthwhile to really notice what I was eating and to eat those foods that energized me or that helped me to thrive. It really wasn't worth it to feel sick all the time.
Yeah. Well, it seems like not a lot of people that I know, but it appears that a lot of people in America, maybe in other countries too, eat things that don't make them feel good. I can't imagine that morbidly obese people feel that good, and they got that way by what they eat. So do you have any advice for anyone listening who, I'm not saying that our listeners are morbidly obese, I didn't mean that, but I think a lot of people tend to just eat whatever is available or in restaurants or what they find in the grocery store and maybe isn't what makes them feel the healthiest or energized or whatever. So I guess I was wondering if you had any advice for any of our listeners who would like to eat healthy or stop eating foods that don't make them feel so good.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's maybe two things I could think of. One would be just to educate ourselves. I mean, the more I found out about what was in the food that I was tending to eat from the market, how laden it was with pesticides and chemicals, you know, to really learn what's in our food and what it does to our bodies is one part of it. And the other thing is that food is very emotional. It's very much a part of the way we learned to nurture ourselves, to take care of ourselves. A lot of times if we're feeling anxious or not feeling so good, we tend to eat, have a cookie, have something sweet to kind of comfort ourselves. And I'm all for being gentle and nurturing ourselves, but also to just kind of get to know yourself, know ourselves better, and understand maybe what some of the feelings are, or let ourselves know what we're feeling. Kind of sort that out and be able to make more conscious choices about what we choose, the ways we choose to nurture ourselves.
Sounds good. So I'm wondering how I guess is a lifestyle for you, eating healthy and eating good food that makes you feel good. And I'm wondering how that ties into permaculture. Sounds like they go together well.
Yeah, I sort of discovered in taking this course that permaculture, it's kind of a language. It's a, a, an umbrella and a language, a way of speaking about many, many things that I've been learning over the years. I think we all have, relating to culture and how we live on the earth, how we live with each other, about taking care of the earth and each other and ourselves.
Oh, the question was how permaculture and your healthy lifestyle kind of go together. It sounds like they do go together. A healthy eating and mindful eating, or eating in a way that makes you feel good, mm-hmm. is linked to permaculture.
And yeah, it's like permaculture, permanent culture for so-called permanent culture. I mean, we don't live forever, but sustainable. Living for it's what we eat, and how we take care of ourselves, and how we treat the earth, and how we care for the earth, so that it is a sustainable lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
Cool. That sounds really good. Did you have any other thoughts about food or permaculture and food or the way you eat, because I know it's not entirely unique among some circles like here in Santa Cruz, but in some parts of the country, maybe where you live, I'm not sure, your style of eating is kind of radical in a way. I mean, a lot of people just eat typical American food, which these days doesn't tend to be fresh, healthy food from the local farmers market, you know?
Yeah, I guess my... my hope or my thought about that is that, and I can see that it's happening, that more and more people across the country are thinking about and creating little gardens or little places in their yards or their apartments or their homes where they start to grow some of their own food. And I guess my hope would be that this idea of sustainable living on the earth and growing up food could really spread all around the world, so that people that are living in areas of poverty and hunger can become reconnected to the land and to growing their own food, nurturing themselves from their land. It's entirely possible.
Sounds good. Well, now I wanted to talk a little bit about vegetable gardening at this time of year, and if you have any anything you'd like to add to my thoughts about vegetable gardening in May, please chime in. I'll start off with a non-vegetable, fruit trees. So in May, which is the month we're in at the moment, it's a good time to fertilize your apple trees and other fruit trees, as they have already set their fruit and can use the fertilizer to grow their fruit. So that's one task that you, if you have any fruit trees on your property or in a pot on your porch, go ahead and give them some fertilizer so they can produce some nice big fruits for you. And another thing I wanted to talk about is the number one crop that home gardeners grow, which is tomatoes, of course. Everybody wants a homegrown tomato. And now is the time to plant them. It's a little tiny bit later than some people like to plant them. A lot of people in Santa Cruz like to plant their tomatoes in April, but it's still not too late. You will still get a healthy, happy crop, delicious crop of tomatoes if you plant your tomato plants now. I would not recommend planting them from seed at this point. It's a little late for that. But it's definitely a good time to get your tomato starts in the ground. And I like to buy tomato starts at the farmer's market. There's, if you have a local farmer's market wherever you are, there might be someone selling vegetable starts there. Or if you're in Santa Cruz, I recommend the tomato starts at the downtown market. Or you could go to any of the plant stores I noticed there's a new one called Dig near downtown, Design Interior Garden, and they mentioned that they have vegetable starts. Maybe I wasn't supposed to plug a location, a business. Anyway, you don't have to go there if you don't want to. Go to any store that sells plants, especially vegetable starts, because you want to find some good healthy ones. And the way to pick out a vegetable, a tomato start is get one that's not too leggy, doesn't have yellow leaves on the bottom, and preferably with no flowers on the plant. They shouldn't be flowering already. When you get it home, you want to dig a big hole and put a whole bunch of stuff in the hole before you plant your tomato. And for some good tomato care planting instructions and tomato care, go to the website for our local tomato expert, Love Apple Farm. You can find their website at growbetterveggies.com. And she has a list on there of all the things that go in the planting hole before you plant your tomato, which includes fish heads and worm castings and aspirin and I forgot all the other stuff, but it's on there. And you can find a link to growbetterveggies.com. You can find a link to that website on my Facebook page, which is Your Homegrown Food Show on Facebook. And there's a ton of other great information on my Facebook page, too. But you can find a link to Love Apple Farm's website, and there's a lot of good tomato care information on her website. And then once you put all her special ingredients into the hole, then you cover those ingredients with about an inch of soil, then you plant your tomato, and you want to plant the tomato up to the very top leaves. She recommends planting the entire, pretty much the entire stem of the tomato, and that is because tomatoes are advantageous rooters, and they'll grow roots along the stem of the plant, and they'll have more stability and be happy. And all that good stuff that goes in the hole supposedly will produce delicious, lovely tomatoes later on in the summer. So good luck with that.
I have a question, Wonder Fox.
Yes.
I had heard once that if you kind of lay your tomato horizontally mm-hmm. underground, that's good because the roots like sun. Do you suggest that or plant it deep?
Well, if you live in a place that's always cold, like it's cold at night and it doesn't get very warm during the day, then that means, or if you're in a really foggy place, that means the soil doesn't warm up very well. So that might be a good idea because tomatoes want to be planted in really warm soil. That might be a good way around having cold soil.
So that's wisdom I heard in Vermont.
yeah, that's probably good advice for someone living in a place that has cooler soil, that because of cooler air temperatures and less sun shining directly on the soil. Another thing people do is use black plastic mulch. That absorbs heat and can warm up the soil. And you can also use a cloche when the tomato plant is small, which is one of those glass dome thingies that you put over the tomato. But I've also seen people use something called wall of water, and it's a plastic thing that you pour water in the sides, and that insulates the tomato. Because you definitely don't want to plant your tomatoes during cold weather or in cold soil. They don't like that. It can stunt their growth. When I plant my tomatoes, I tend to pinch off the flowers, if there are any when they're small, because you want the tomato to grow big, strong structure before it grows tomatoes. You don't want to have big, fat tomatoes growing on a little wimpy plant. Because as they begin to grow tomatoes, they grow less plant structure, and then you'll just eventually have less. In the end, you'll have less tomatoes. You want a nice big plant first, because then it can grow lots of fruit on that plant.
Bigger yield.
Yeah. And so now is also a good time to plant other warm season crops, such as eggplants, peppers, basil, squash, and melons. And if you are near the ocean, some of these may be hard to grow. So look for varieties that have an early maturation date. They will do better with the foggier and colder conditions. So if you live slightly inland, like Aptos or just, you know, anywhere that's not as affected by the ocean, you can grow all kinds of warm season vegetables without any problem, because it stays warmer at night and the day temperature gets hotter and there's less fog in the air to affect the amount of sunlight that the plants get. So, but if you live within a few miles of the ocean, you're gonna be affected by fog mostly and cooler nighttime temperatures. So things like melons and squashes and eggplants and peppers and even tomatoes can be affected by the cooler temperatures and less sunlight. So it's a good idea to pay attention to the variety of the vegetable that you buy. If you look in seed catalogs, I mean, now is it a little bit late for starting things from seed, but seed catalogs often sell varieties that will do better in lower light conditions or in foggier places. But like I said before, you want to pick varieties that have earlier maturation dates. So plant tag or the seed packet will say, like, harvest within X amount of days, or, you know, we'll be ready to pick in 46 days or whatever. And you want to get the varieties that'll be ready sooner, because they'll do better in our coastal region. And you can also, I guess I already mentioned that, you can find varieties that are bred for, it might be hybrids, they're bred for lower light conditions or foggier conditions, or you might get some heirloom varieties that were grown over many years in our certain location. Like, there's some tomato varieties that were grown in San Francisco for years and years and years. Those are heirloom varieties that are adapted to the foggy San Francisco area. And the same could be true in Santa Cruz. There's varieties, heirloom varieties that were grown here for years and years, and so they do really well. That's what heirlooms are good for. They're good for local conditions, because we here in Santa Cruz have the challenge of our weather. I mean, it's great that we can garden all year because we can have lettuce in December, but when it comes to warm season crops, it can be a little bit challenging because of the weather, obviously. And one thing to keep in mind is you can try to grow pretty much anything you want. You just have to know that you might get a smaller yield than someone who lives in a warm place, or that the plant will be smaller, and that's okay. Just plant more if you have the space, or just know that you're going to get less than you might otherwise if you lived in a warm place. But that doesn't bother me. I still get to harvest stuff from my garden, even though my plants aren't as humongous as somebody who lives a few miles inland or up in the mountains or something where it's really hot. So those are my pieces of advice for gardening in May. Anything else to tell you? I don't think so. Do you have anything to add about gardening in May?
Gardening in May in Virginia is quite different. I'm still getting my beds together. We have lots of flowers so far. Guess nothing too helpful to Santa Cruz.
That's quite all right. Gardening's always a good conversation. So, so I think that wraps up the show for today. And you are listening to Your Homegrown Food, and I'm your host, Wanda Fox. And my guest in the studio today was Mama Fox. Thanks for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
Sharing your words of wisdom about food. And thank you all for listening. And you can listen to Your Homegrown Food every Wednesday at 11:30. It's a half-hour show, 11:30 to 12. And you can find out more information about the show or about anything that I talked about on any of the shows at my Facebook page, which is Your Homegrown Food Show. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and freakradio.org on the internet. And we can always use your donations if you would like to donate to the station to keep us going, because we are a entirely volunteer-run organization, and we run completely on donations, mostly from programmers, but also from listeners like you. So send your donations to Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Let's see, where's the address here? I have it here somewhere. FRSC 7811. Oh, that's the P.O. Box. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. And you can also make PayPal donations at freakradio.org. So thank you all for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.
I could eat a bowl of cherries, oh Lord. I could eat a bowl a day, jump back, turn around, eat a bowl of cherries. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl a day. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl of cherries. Jump back, turn around, eat a bowl a day. Oh Lord, I could eat a bowl of cherries. Oh Lord, I could eat a bowl a day. Oh Lord, I could eat a bowl of cherries.
This is Chris from Propaganda. You're listening to 101.